She's a former public school teacher turned stay-at-home mom. He's a talk show host who's made a career covering politics from afar. Now, Christine Stegall and her husband Chris have chosen a new path forward for their child in Christian education. Join them as they explore and experience this important alternative in education for the first time. Welcome to Making the Leap.
I would anticipate now that we were at 10 in 2023, that we'll pick up another 3 or 4 states in 2024 to join in.
Welcome back into another episode of Making the Leap. We're so glad you're here today with us. We have a repeat guest, and I always get excited when we have our guests coming back that we've had on before. And this one in particular, we had a lot of different topics that we wanted to cover, ran out of time. And I'm like, we have to have her back, get her with us again. Specifically,
well, in fact, we forgot the reason we even had her on. Our conversation went so well before. The whole reason we had her on is what we want to talk about today.
We had at the time when we had her on, we ended up having a wonderful conversation about educational savings accounts and what education savings accounts are about, what was happening in all the states, and it worked out really, really well. But we had to postpone this conversation. So today we are bringing in Dr. Ingraham, who we've had on just once before. And if you are interested in going back and hearing some of that conversation, that was back in October. It was episode 79. I went back and looked to make sure that I gave that correct information, because it really was a wonderful conversation in terms of informing people what that is about and what is happening in all the different states, because it's tremendous progress. And so today we are here with Carrie to talk a lot about what is called college simulated learning. So Carrie, thank you so much for making the time to be with us today.
You bet. Great to be back.
We have, I think since we talked, and here as we start a new year, Texas has been coming kind of into the fold. I think maybe there are a few more states since we last talked that are flirting, getting closer. What's your diagnosis? How many more states do you think in this year of 2024 do you think we could see embrace school choice? Would you even care to guess? I know legislatures are fickle things, and governors too.
Well, before I make any 2024 projections, let me just recap really quick. So as of 2 years ago, no states had universal school choice. Last year in 2022, Governor Doug Ducey in Arizona passed just the most historic universal school choice bill that could have happened. And it was worthy of just so much notoriety, so much attention. Well, right on the heels of that was West Virginia passed theirs. But Arizona really got overshadowed, because this year we've already seen 8 other states pass universal school choice. Some of those are education savings accounts. One state, Oklahoma, has a tax credit. And then 3 states have private school scholarship programs.
Yeah, so that's all in the year of 2022 and 2023. And so as we kick off this year of 2024, I'm very excited, because now we're into a brand new legislative session. So we'll see what 2024 brings. I was just curious if you thought you knew of any states that might be on the cusp in this year of 2024 of passing something new.
Definitely, Louisiana has a new governor. It's a top priority for him.
Oh, that's right.
Louisiana is going to come on the scene. Georgia. So in 2023, the governor there, Kemp, he was a little bit late to the game of really getting behind the education savings account movement in Georgia, but he is now 100% ready to go. So lots of hope for Georgia. There's other red states sprinkled across the country that are going to make good pushes for this. So I would anticipate now that we were at 10 in 2023, that we'll pick up another 3 or 4 states in 2024 to join in. Absolutely incredible. To make the decision.
Well, and with this advent, with the things, with everything shifting from state to state and really kind of seeing this sweep across the country in general, one of the reasons I specifically wanted to have you back on was to talk about what that means, not just for private schools, not just for homeschools and co-ops, but also for the public school system. Because obviously one of the things that we hear a lot about is that as we talk about education savings accounts and tax dollars, that it's going to decimate the public school system. And some people want that to happen. But there are people that say, you know what, this is really an amazing opportunity for public schools to kind of pull it together and use what I think are some pretty innovative approaches to making things happen for these public schools who do serve a huge population of people, whether it's rural, urban, suburban. We've got some really, really neat ideas here. And one of those that I think has been adopted by some places on some level is this idea of the CSLs, these college simulated learning models. And so that's primarily why we have you here today. And I wanted to start off by just having you maybe kind of give that broad overview of what that is, what the kind of a basic definition for people who maybe haven't heard it. And then we can kind of talk some more about what it might mean for people.
You bet. Well, hybrid education has been on the scene for over 30 years, but before COVID, few people really understood that there was a way to educate children that was not fully at home or fully at school 5 days a week. But there's been this other model that's been on the scene for decades, but it's just serving a very small population. And so there's different models of hybrid learning, but the model to talk about today would be that college simulated learning. It's most well known by its trademark association, which would be an accrediting body called University Model. So a lot of people have just adopted that language for this model, but technically for a school to fall under the University Model umbrella, they need to be a member of that association. So today, University Model schools with that trademark name, there's 90 schools in 24 states and 4 countries. But looking at the larger college simulated learning, so not all of those schools, like I said, are accredited through that model or have the membership. But that's about 300 to 400. It's a little bit harder to track because they're popping up quicker now as ESA come on the scene, as post-COVID parents are looking for more options, education entrepreneurs are starting these schools. But those are all largely in the private school sector. But there's one public charter school down in Texas I was able to visit a few months ago, spent the day there, and it's called UME Preparatory Academy. It stands for University Method of Education, so UME Prep. And they opened their doors, I believe, in 2012. They now have 3 campuses. I mean, they've got hundreds of children on the wait list for this school. Wow. But they use this model. And the model is where students come to school during the week in a reduced hour or reduced day format. And what that does is it allows parents to be more involved in their child's education.
It struck me because, you know, we've talked a lot lately about just watching our 2 oldest who are moving into either a college setting or work study, you know, different options in front of them. But our oldest, who's not a huge fan of school and kind of tiptoed his way into college just through community college. One thing he specifically liked, which is exactly what this is having that a little bit more flexibility in terms of he has a couple of classes on Monday, Wednesday, a couple of classes on Tuesday, Thursday, doesn't have any on Friday, which I know it's not exactly what this is, but it really, I think, has made school for him. It's, again, different mode, you know, for different learners, made it a little bit more tolerable, made it a little bit less of sit in your seats from 7:30 till 3:30, you know, same, you know, class, bell, that kind of thing. And it really changes it up for kids. And I think also probably helps really prepare them at a high school level to go into that college learning mode where a lot of kids get to school, they get to college, and all of a sudden, there is no bell ringing. There is nobody telling them you have to do that. You know, you have to go here. It's a lot more promotion of independence in terms of learning, I would guess.
Yes, and so many benefits. You've touched on some, but this model is designed where the school provides all of the instruction. They have that professional teacher, the curriculum, they handle all of the assessment, but they give families back time. Mm-hmm. And they equip the parents to be involved. And so the way it models the college structure would be students take a class that would meet for roughly 1 hour on Monday, Wednesday, Friday, or they would take a class that meets for an hour and a half on Tuesday, Thursday. And so that's what they're going to see at the college level. But this model lends itself to mastery-based learning. And so mm-hmm. you might have a fourth grade student who's ready for sixth grade math. Well, because of the model, that student can then attend that sixth grade class for the math they need, or other students that maybe need some remediation. There's just so much flexibility with this model, but parents are equipped. They're able to help their student, and it's a progression. So in elementary, the parent's more of a private tutor during those at-home mm-hmm. days. But the school's provided all of the material and given them instructions on what to do. And then as they progress through middle school, high school, they're preparing for college, career, they start to develop these students more and more independent learning skills. And so it's gradually parents are stepping back from being that private tutor to more of just the accountability, the encouragement. And when college hits or the career for these students, they are so well prepared to take initiative in their learning, responsibility, and they've just developed a love for learning because it's a different model. And so what we're seeing the results of these graduates, I actually met with a group of graduates from the first university model school that opened its doors in 1993. So these are, you know, adults that now have their own children. I met with them and they were talking about how pivotal it was during their life when this school opened. They were all middle school age at that time, so they were able to come over from the traditional model into this university model school that met 2 days a week to 3 days a week, depending on the grades. And they were reflecting back all these years later and saying, that really strengthened my relationship with my mom, with my dad. I just had more time. I had more academic support to work ahead. Or for another student, she was reflecting back that school's hard for her. And this model allowed her to catch up in some areas where the traditional model had not prepared her well, but to exit with such confidence to mm-hmm. use the way God had equipped her post high school to use her gifts and strengths. So incredible just to see all these years back how it was such a defining moment for students to have the opportunity to do school a little bit different and that gift of time back with their family.
So Carrie, is this a way that public schools who are, you know, this has been a thing that we've been seeing across the country too. Public schools are, because they're short staffed, they don't have enough teachers or maybe resources, whatever that is, they've scaled back to 4 day a week class structure, you know, canceling a full day of the week. Is that, I mean, would it be, and maybe you're not in the business of counseling public school districts, but if you're on a public school board, would this be a creative new way for these districts that have gone to 4 day weeks to maybe implement some of this program into their system?
Yes, and I would make the distinction kind of like we saw online schools before COVID, where they were designed to deliver that way. Teachers were equipped. The learning was designed for online delivery as well as the assessments. Online learning was strong, but we can't compare that to those remote Zoom sessions that were happening as everyone was forced into. Well, I would say the same thing with this model. So this is a model that works well for families who have intentionally selected it, where they can have a parent involved at home during those at-home days. But what we're seeing with these school districts that are reducing hours, they're really doing that to incentivize the adults, to incentivize the teachers. And so I don't see this being kind of apples to apples with that. But to your point, this could be an excellent solution for public schools that have seen significant enrollment decline because parents are going elsewhere, to within their district, instead of, you know, maybe consolidating multiple campuses because of the enrollment decline, to say, hey, we're going to find a way to keep families or to attract families by offering a different model and a model that allows parents to be more involved at a time when typically across the nation, public school districts are trying to say parents hands off, you know, we're the mm-hmm. experts, or our kids is the language that these teacher unions are using against the reality that it's moms and dads' children. But it's a way for them to make up for some of their financial challenges right now with enrollments going down. So, for example, when you use this model of college simulated learning, you can serve twice as many students on the same campus. So you can lower facility costs. Same thing with the teachers. The teachers can serve twice as many students because the students are only there either the Monday, Wednesday, Friday, or the Tuesday, Thursday, depending on grade. You know, so you have to be creative. You could also have part-time teachers as well, because not all, you know, middle school teachers may necessarily be able to also teach high school or vice versa. But it's a way for them to reduce personnel costs, facility costs. But then for other areas where more facilities are needed in public schools, it's a way to take their existing footprint and expand it. And it doesn't mean all the schools in the district go to this model, right, but they could try one school, you know, after polling parents, seeing what parents want.
I think it's such a neat, you know, we talk about it with the public school realm, but it's also, you know, a way within the private school sector to, you know, when they're limited by the building that they have in front of them. And it, I mean, we're right now going through that with our daughter's school, that we're in the middle of a capital campaign. We are trying to raise money so that we can expand our amount of classrooms. But this is a really great, it's an option for schools to consider that maybe don't have the ability to access the millions of dollars it would take to, you know, to create a bigger building. Instead, you get a little bit creative with how you're managing your space that you have and open up the doors to, for example, a Christian school that wants to serve families, but they're limited. And because we've seen so many Christian schools across the board that have huge waiting lists, private schools have huge waiting lists. This is a great way, I would think, to maybe kind of meet in the middle on that. You don't, yes, you still want to maybe create space, auditoriums, sport, you know, things like that, but you also may be able to do this as a way to, and I don't know, to offer a kind of a homeschool hybrid option versus
I was about to say, is that what you would describe this as, Carrie? Like a homeschool brick and mortar school hybrid is kind of what it sounds like.
Yes. So some people do describe the college simulated model or the university model as a hybrid homeschool. But I actually make the distinction a little bit different, because homeschool, we think the burden of gathering the curriculum, planning the lessons, right, doing the assessment falls on the parent.
Parents.
Well, with this model, the school provides all of that. They just want to encourage parents to be more involved. They're going to give them the resources to extend the learning at school into home. So it's a little bit different than typically like a hybrid homeschool where the parent has that responsibility to gather all of the learning. But Christine, I love what you said. For Christian schools right now, there is such an incredible need for Christian schools to expand. Because as these states have these education savings accounts, these private school scholarships, more and more families, it's going to be financially feasible for them to have an option outside of the public school. And private schools, because of the COVID school shutdowns being prolonged and they reopened immediately, they hit wait lists and beyond. And so capital campaigns are tough with our economy right now. It takes a while to build a building. But there's an opportunity for schools where it doesn't take as much space to serve twice as many students, whether, you know, it's portable structures they put up in the interim to get as many children who want to attend their school as possible there. Also, you look at those price points of those education savings accounts, of the private school scholarships, and sometimes traditional private schools are still out of reach. Mm-hmm. But the tuition of these college simulated learning models, whether it's 2 days a week or the 3 days a week, it keeps that cost more around 40 to 60% of a 5 day a week private school tuition. And so it matches up with those ESAs, allowing parents even some additional funds to cover, you know, whether it's uniforms or fees, books, those things. But we're going to see, I think, in the coming years, as more education entrepreneurs come on the scene, just an explosion of this model within Christian schools, within other private schools. And if legislators in various states can get behind this model, change some things like seat time requirement to allow the model to be adopted within the public school system, whether it's a traditional district school or a charter school, there's just going to be a huge growing demand. Right now, there was a poll by EdChoice, and it shows that 59% of parents, this is absolutely incredible, 59% of parents do not desire that their child is on campus at a school 5 days a week. The majority of those mm-hmm. desire a 2 to 3 day a week model, 30% within there. And so knowing that parents want this, knowing more and more parents have the opportunity to do hybrid work themselves or remote learning, there's more flexibility for them to be at home. Those ESAs are making it financially feasible. And so just really excited about the opportunity at a time when public schools are keeping parents out more and more to say, hey, here's a model where moms and dads can be involved as that educator of their child. They can know what's going on. But in the rat race of life, they can just slow down and have quality time with their children during the week.
You know, I have a story in front of me, Carrie, that is, I hear what you're saying and how great that sounds versus what, you know, just happened here at the tail end of 2023 in Oregon. Senate Bill 744 in the Oregon Legislative Assembly back in 2021, they said they were going to implement something called an assessment of essential skills required for high school graduation. That's to read and comprehend a variety of text and write and accurately apply mathematics in a variety of settings. Well, then COVID. Then, you know, everything ends with then COVID. So Oregon's legislature's response to this was, never mind, we're scrapping all that. And they voted unanimously to adopt an extension of a suspension of any requirement through 2028. Board members with the Oregon Department of Education argued requiring students to complete standardized tests both presented a harmful hurdle for historically marginalized students. So said another way, Oregon is effectively letting kids graduate through 2028 without any kind of metrics, without any kind of measurement. And I just think to myself, my gosh, 5 days a week you're sending your kids to an Oregon public mm-hmm. school when something like this, yeah, it seems so an answer to me, such an easy answer. If that's something, you know, if you lived in Oregon, for instance, and you would hope that your child would be held to some kind of standard, for heaven's sakes.
Yeah, it's such a shame what's happening with the dumbing down of education, you know, under the guise of equity. Mm-hmm. We cannot force uniform outcomes in anything in life. You know, you look at professional athletics. We don't force that there's, you know, uniform performance outcomes based on race, based on socioeconomic status. We put the competition out there and people have the opportunity to be trained and equipped and then perform. Well, we need to do that in academics, because lowering the bar is hurting each individual student. It's hurting our communities, our future workforce development, and really the future of our country when kids aren't prepared. It's doing a disservice to them. And so we see, not just like in Oregon where people are, you know, saying we can't have these standardized tests in the name of equity, but we're also seeing this tremendous grade inflation happening, where schools want to really just kind of gaslight parents and make them think their children are learning when they are not, because they don't want the accountability that they are not doing their job, because they're spending academic time on these misplaced political priorities in the classroom. So it's no wonder children aren't learning the basics. But lowering the expectations, it's hurting everybody. We want to set high expectations, but then provide quality instruction, great support to help every learner reach their full potential.
I really think there is something, you know, when we're talking about this shared responsibility, you know, several years ago, I guess, when I was a teacher, you know, I definitely wanted that partnership with the parents. And then, you know, as things started shifting, I kind of backed away from saying, you know, I want to partner with you. I want to partner with you, because it was different and it got a little bit harder. Then I became a parent with kids and, you know, and I thought, no, they're mine. And this model, this university model, seems to solidly put that parenting piece in the parents' realm and the education piece in the teacher's realm, but yet finds a unique way to fuse it together, I think, in a way that seems beneficial for everybody and allows kind of allows those parents to see into the classroom what is happening, stay involved, be a participant, be a supporter. But the teachers still get to do their jobs in a way that's effective, and the parents are getting to do their jobs in ways that are effective. And it seems like this is a great way to kind of merge the two arenas together. And if you're a Christian school doing this, I think it's lends itself very well to a biblical worldview, where then you definitely know, you know, what is underlying here within the curriculum. I think there's amazing potential with this.
I would say, I mean, you nailed it. In addition to parents wanting that quality academic instruction for their children from schools, you know, it's kind of should go without saying, but now parents are having to advocate for quality academics, but they also want education that aligns with their values, to your point, and they want more time. You know, kids are just so busy with extracurriculars, co-curricular activities, things where they have giftings and strengths. Parents don't want to pull them from that. But the pace of life, they want to recapture some family time. During the formative years of their children's life, they want to be the ones to instill character in them, a biblical worldview, have strong relationships. And this slows down the pace. It lets the family work with the teachers to have all of the curriculum provided, all of the learning. But there's also flexibility, and I should mention this too, where when the family enrolls in a college-simulated school, typically they can select which courses they want their child to take and which ones they don't. So they don't necessarily have to be full-time within this part-time model. You know, they might say, hey, we want to do history at home. And so they have that flexibility. And so the way that you can customize this, it keeps the cost lower. It invites parents in. There's just so many benefits of this model. And again, to see the huge parent demand, now is the time to be growing the supply in the private market, but also passing some legislation to move this more into charter schools beyond the one that we have today in Texas, and also into those district public schools.
That was the point you made a little bit ago, and I loved the term educational entrepreneurs. And it is the great equalizer when you let market forces dictate the terms of everything we do, from the televisions you buy to the doctor you choose
to the teacher that you
the home you buy. Why shouldn't education be the same? And so all of these great thinkers who are creating new ways for kids to learn, making it more affordable for kids, it's this diverse portfolio. We're diversifying the way kids can learn, and there's a great resistance to that. And it seems strange, because if you talked about, I was like to say,
sports teams, just take it basic.
You can go into Best Buy today and have a selection of, you know, 30 different televisions. No one would ever in the United States say, let's all just agree that one television will do for all of us. But for some reason, there are a lot of people that still think education ought to be that way, Carrie.
Yeah, absolutely. This, you know, one size fits all. Well, that's the way it was 40, 50, 60, 70 years, even 100 years ago.
Right.
but our world is not the same as it was back then. And so we've got to have education looking forward, equipping students for the future, because the students, you know, that are even elementary, middle school today, they're not entering today's world. They're going to exit their K-12 years into this future world that is just advancing so fast with technology and beyond. So equipping them for that, but this one size fits all, you know, sit in rows for 6.5 to 7 hours a day has been failing 77% of students. So in the US, in public schools, 77% of students do not exit after the 13 years of seat time proficient across subjects when you average out their 7 core subjects. And so it's not working. We've got to allow for flexibility, for new ways of thinking in education. And education entrepreneurs have a tremendous opportunity. There's no time in history when parents are more interested in alternatives than that historic one-size-fits-all traditional model. But they also, these education entrepreneurs, they have the leg up in the field of education versus other fields, because they know in the States with these education savings accounts and private school scholarships, exactly the level of funding that customers can bring. You know, so they'll know in Arizona, families have 7,500 students to spend per child per year. So they can build a business model around that to make the strongest education to, you know, figure out how to recruit, retain the highest quality teachers. Mm-hmm. And they know that they're creating a product that's in high demand and that everyone's going to be able to afford in a state like Arizona that has universal ESAs. And so the time is now for those in the business sector, education entrepreneurs, as well as educators, to move over and say, hey, I'm going to take control of my future. You know, I'm not just going to stay in a traditional school with a stair-step salary schedule that ignores mm-hmm. my performance. I'm going to step over and develop a school or partner with an existing school to help them reach more and more families through this model. So really exciting opportunity on many fronts.
It really is. I so appreciate you taking the time to talk with us about this. And I'll be excited at the end of this year when we're sitting in December, looking back at this conversation today, I bet for sure that we're going to see school, like people starting this type of thing, watching it grow, watching it expand, even without necessarily legislation behind it or anything. I think there are so many people that are just at that point of like, enough, and here we come. And I, as a teacher, that was probably anything that was kind of an outside of the box that always got me excited. I mean, I feel like I could run out of here and be like, come on, let's start the, you know, I'll head this up, because it just makes sense. And Carrie, I thank you again so much for taking your time today to talk with us about this and bring this to the attention of our audience. Hopefully this will kind of get some people even thinking about what options they could have in front of them if they wanted to be a little bit more forward thinking.
Yeah. Can people research this, Carrie, by the way, if they want to, what we've been talking about today? Is there a site or a place that you would direct people?
Yes. If they go to discovery.org/education, they can see all of my work out there, my articles. And there's an article on that page that they'll find called College Simulated Learning for K-12. It explains how the model can start in the public sector, as well as how it can grow in the private school arena.
We'll put that information on our show notes page as well. Carrie Ingraham, a pleasure to kick off a new year with you. Let us hope that this explodes by this time next year, and we'll talk again. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I'm so glad we were able to talk about that today. I really, it really does. Like I'm not being, maybe I sound nerdy about it, but I really do remember back when I was teaching and getting the opportunity during various years to try something different, designed to, you know, reach kids in a better way, have more time for material learning. But then now to think about it in a way to collaborate with parents, to be working with them and not feel like you're working against them. I think this is such an awesome opportunity. And primarily, I think it's phenomenal for the private school sector who has these wait lists.
Well, you made a great point. It takes the strain off the wait lists,
right,
which most young families, and we're thrilled to see it. Mm-hmm. You hear it. I don't think there's a single Christian school we encounter that doesn't say that K through what, five particularly, K mm-hmm. through four, five,
they have the wait list.
They're exploding with wait lists. Young parents, young families mm-hmm. Can't get in.
I know.
And they want to start their kids off with a different, and this, I just love the term, and I can already hear the hissing from union types, educational entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. Just like medicine, I am for creative people offering the best product. If that costs a little more or mm-hmm. there's a cost savings involved, you want the best product that works for you.
Right.
I'm stunned at how long, for how many decades, ourselves included, well, this is just the way you do it. You go to school 5 days a week mm-hmm. on a bus for 8 hours mm-hmm. and then that's why?
No.
It doesn't have to be that way.
Well,
it never
it,
had to be
it
that
is.
Way.
It's something, too, when I think about just, you know, when you have schools where you have a track where you freshman year, sophomore year, junior year, senior year, this, it really does open up new avenues for learning that help us kind of move away from that mindset, like she said, of the one size fits all. But where, wow, if you could do something different than biology, chemistry, physics, you know, if you could do something a little bit different, combine, you know, in a way that maybe removes kids from this classroom, opens up this space for this room, you know, you can really juggle it, I guess, and really create some neat growth opportunities and not have to have five new classrooms, yeah. and new, you know, I mean, it comes with its own challenges, I'm sure. In fact, I know it would. I can already, you know, kind of envision some of them. But it really does allow for what parents, how they want to educate and how they want to see their kids educated. This really does provide a great opportunity.
Already hear the critics. I will stave off the critics now. When you hear, and it was the same last year when we were talking about homeschool stories and all these, you know, studies that were coming out, surveys, Washington Post, their head was on fire about homeschool on the rise, the explosion of homeschool. Mm-hmm. And you always hear the critics say, how can we be sure the nation's children are all learning what they need to know? What if we're raising a generation of dummies? And all I would say is, well, look at what Oregon's doing. Oregon has said we have absolutely no metrics or standards whatsoever through 2028
to graduate your kid. It actually kind of shoots that argument in the foot, because now you know what I mean? You can say, well, Oregon has decided this, so why not try something that actually looks like it will be effective with standards?
If public schools have decided we're not going to measure it anymore, then what's it matter how it's done?
I step in the parents and step in the caring concern. Teachers that actually do want to teach, this seems like an amazing opportunity.
Well, that information, like we said, is in the show notes page. If people want to know more from Carrie, right?
Sending us an email helps us, gives us ideas, puts us in contact with people to reach. We always appreciate that. I actually got an email last week from somebody who said, I think you need an episode about fill in the blank. I'll keep it a little bit of a secret. But I was like, that sounds awesome. And I think that's great. And so I love that we get to kind of hear from people what they want to know about. It helps us know what people want to hear. So anytime at all, send us an email. That information is all listed below for you. Reviews, those 5-star reviews, wherever you listen to podcasts, always helpful. And happy new year to everybody. And we will see you next week.
Making the Leap is a podcast presentation courtesy of the Herzog Foundation. Please rate and comment on the show, as well as subscribe so you never miss an episode. And we'll see you next time on Making the Leap.